So I think y'all tonight is going to be the last night that I do anything on the timeline. I'm gonna cut it. I'm not going to go into the detail I've been going into. I think if I keep going in this detail, well, first off, I have 25 pages of notes. So, and I'm averaging a page to a page and a half per time. So we would be the end of the year before we got through this. So, well, I think this is going to be it. I'm gonna hit the high points and us move on. Plus, I have some things, other things I want to talk about. There are times where, and I don't think that this is always. I think sometimes these can get to be a tedium. And I think especially some of the younger kids are having a harder time with keeping track of running it on a regular basis. But we brought it through last time. We brought it through Joseph being put in charge, the 7 years of plenty, and then the famine began. And then we were getting ready in 1875 B.C., Joseph's brothers sent to Egypt. And that is Genesis 42. And I think the most important thing to remember here is that Joseph, and we had just gone through this, but Joseph had every reason to despise his brothers. And I think Joseph is not just a type of Christ, in that Christ had every reason to hate us and despise us. But he loved us. And I think it's a type for us to follow. Anytime there's a type of Christ in the Bible, it's a type for us to follow. And what I mean by that is, we're told to love our neighbors as ourselves. We're told, and there's a whole range of God is love, and there are people who go too far on that. Because God did destroy countries. God did destroy races of people because they failed to do what God told them to do. And he ordered David to destroy people, and he ordered others to destroy people. And sometimes they didn't destroy those people like they were told to. And then later it came back on them because those same people continued to probe and prick them. And one of the things there is, we need to do what God says. And if he tells you to, if you're shown to destroy someone, we don't get words from God like they did in the Old Testament. But if we have an order to love one another, but we don't have an order to accept their lifestyles. If we exclude somebody from this church, you aren't to have dinner with them. And you know, I always wondered if, you know, when my kids were at home, and if the church decided to take put discipline on them and exclude them from the church. Well, you aren't supposed to treat them as a brother. How do you take that? How do you do that as a family member? That's something, and I still, fortunately, I wasn't ever faced with that. But you know, that's something real that could happen to, that could really happen to a family member who went to church with another family member. You could have a family member excluded, and you're supposed to, basically, like this Quakers do, shun them. You aren't to have fellowship with them. So, those are things that. Joseph could have done those things. Joseph very easily could have turned his back on his brothers, turned his back on his family. But he loved them. He provided them food. And he didn't go, well, you know, y'all did that to me back there. Y'all want food? Here's the rules. And he did what we need to do as Christians to others. Then Simeon detained by Joseph, the return with Benjamin, and I'm going to move through here rapidly. This is all in 1875 BC. This is the whole time where Jacob and his family to Egypt, Genesis starts in Genesis 42 and runs through 46. And then Jacob goes to Goshen. Jacob and his family to Egypt is Genesis 46. And that's 1875 BC. 1875 BC was a very productive year, as we see here. And then in 1859 is Jacob's illness. And that's Genesis 48. And then 1859 was Jacob's blessings and death, the burial of Jacob. And then in 1806 is the death of Joseph. And then 1800, Jacob's family stays in Egypt. Now we're into Exodus 1. So this up to there is Genesis. We're moving into Exodus. Jacob's family stays in Egypt. The Israelites multiply in Egypt. Let's read that Exodus 1:6 just to get a... I don't want to do like the sermon I listened to Sunday where there was no scripture in it. Although I'm referring it to scripture, I want to read a few here and there. So Exodus 1:6, so Joseph died and all his brethren and all that generation, and the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly and multiplied and waxed exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. And this is important because the fact that they were in bondage here, and they multiplied, and they were growing, and they were, even though they were in bondage, they were being blessed. And the thing is there came a point in time where there was far more of the Israelites than there were of the Egyptians. And the Israelites could have overthrown them. But they stayed right there until God took them out of there. And when they left, they left without shedding blood. God shed all the blood. So, and then 1:8 is when now there arose up a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. He said unto his people, behold, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come on, let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply. And it come to pass that when there falleth out any war, they join also under our enemies and fight against us. And so get them up out of the land. So then in 1:22 is where Pharaoh orders them to kill the firstborn. And Pharaoh charged all this people, saying, every son that is born ye shall cast in the river, and every daughter ye shall save alive. This removes bloodlines, removes family names, removes heirs. It obliterates a nation for all their firstborn sons to be killed. So then Exodus 2, we have the birth and adoption of Moses. And this is where Pharaoh's own daughter takes Moses in. It's very important because Moses is their deliverer out of Egypt. And then 2:11 is where Moses flees into Midian. And this is, we're into 1486 B.C. The birth of Moses was 1525 B.C. And by the way, if any of y'all want this document, I'll send it to you in email, or I'll print it out for you. I'll bring it to you on a thumb drive because it's quite detailed. So, and then 1446, Israelites grown in slavery. Moses sent to deliver Israel. That's 1446 B.C. And then that's Exodus 3 through 6. Then Exodus 7 through 12 is the 10 plagues on Egypt. This is where God makes the Egyptians willing to allow the Israelites to leave by visiting those. You know, there's a song out there. It's called the Wasp Song. I'll never forget it. And no, God didn't make them go. He just made them willing to go. And sometimes God needs to make us willing to do things that we really don't want to do and we know we're supposed to do. And He uses methods to make us willing. And I'll give you a personal example of that. Telling myself. So until I was 36, I smoked. Smoked pretty heavily. And at 36, it was Wednesday night, getting ready to go to church. Went outside, had a cigarette, went back in the house, and Kathy and the kids were getting ready, and I got to feeling queasy. Well, that was the night I had my first heart attack. That was the last cigarette. And, you know, I knew I shouldn't be smoking, and but I wasn't willing to give them up. God made me willing to give them up. And, and through that, some of the things that probably made it even worse was not just the fact I had 5 days in the hospital that I was flat on my back, couldn't go out and have a cigarette or anything, but part of that too was the fact that I watched as my kids came into the room and, you know, said, if I don't quit this, I'm not going to see them graduate from high school. I'm not going to see them get married. I'm not going to see this. I'm not going to see. Of course, you know, the Lord could have taken me out then anyway. But I knew if I didn't do what I was supposed to, he was going to allow me to die. So, you know, I quit smoking. Haven't had a cigarette since. But so then the 10 plagues, and then the Exodus begins in 1446 B.C. The Israelites at Mount Sinai, and that's Exodus 19. Then Exodus 20, Moses receives the commandments. And then 1446 B.C., still Exodus 25 to 31 is preparation for the tabernacle. And the tabernacle was an important part of the Israel's heritage and Israel's legacy, and they moved that through the desert with them, and that was their place of worship while they traveled. And then Exodus 32 in 1446 B.C., the golden calf and Moses' anger. Like Keith was saying earlier, every time the Israelites got things on an even keel and their leader stepped aside for just a minute, didn't have to be long. Moses was only gone, it was either 2 or 3 days, and they had a golden calf made and were out there worshiping it. Now, are we guilty of that? I know at times I get guilty of, you know, I'm not worshiping a golden calf, but it may as well be at times. I mean, we worship at the throne of baseball or football or basketball or whatever it happens to be, at the throne of LSU. But, you know, we wind up chasing those things. Then, so that was where they prepared for the tabernacle. They set up the golden calf. Moses threw a fit, broke the stones, and then went back up and got them again. And then 1446, the journey resumes. That's Exodus 33 through 39. And then 1445, the tabernacle is erected and filled. That's Exodus 40. That's in their time, that was a great time for them, or I feel it would have been a great time for them. That was a type of their temple to come, and they had a place to worship, and at that time they were in good sorts with God. He had just provided; He's providing them with food. He's, you know, and they're following, and He gets them the ability to have that tabernacle. Then, still in 1445 B.C., they're handed down the laws for sacrifices and offerings in Leviticus 1 through 7. Leviticus 8 and 9, Aaron and his son consecrated And I'm not going to keep telling you the year. I'll tell you when it changes, because there's like 10 for 1445 B.C. The sin of Nadab and Abihu, law of purity, punishment and regulations, feast and jubilee, census, tribes, and duties. That's where we change from Leviticus to Numbers, as we see these Bible these books move a lot faster through here. A lot more happening. Tabernacle dedication is in Numbers 7 through 10, still in 1445. The people complain. Imagine that. And then the 12 spies is in Numbers 13. And the people murmur at the spies' report. And that's 14. This is still in 1445 B.C. We know that the people murmuring at the spies' reports, 10 of the spies came back with a poor report. Oh, there's giants out there, and two came back with, it's a land flowing with milk and honey, let's go on, our God is good. And we know that the people took the 10's side, and they got to wander in the wilderness for another 40 years. And that was important, because that killed off all of the generation that had come out of Egypt. So the people who had come out of Egypt, it was their children who went into the promised land. And Moses as a leader failed. And I really believe if he would not have failed, I don't know. God had that under his control. But Moses suffered from that too. He wasn't allowed to go into the promised land. He got to look into it from the mountain on the other side, but he didn't get to see, he didn't get to walk in. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who get to view heaven from hell, but they aren't going to get to walk in because they aren't faithful. I don't believe in losing your salvation, but they weren't saved, and they were rebellious towards God. I don't think you can stay rebellious. I don't think God will let you stay rebellious as a Christian. His punishments will become more and more severe until you get back in line. So, Korah's rebellion in Numbers 16, 1426 B.C. 1426 B.C., Aaron's staff buds in Number 17. In 1426 B.C., priests red heifer cleansing, Numbers 18 and 19. And then we have water from the rock at Meribah, Numbers 20. And then Numbers 20, 22. Let's read that real quick.
What was it?
Numbers 20, 22. This is Aaron's death in 1407 B.C. And the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, journeyed from Kadesh and came unto Mount Hor. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron in Mount Hor by the coast of the land of Edom, saying, Aaron shall be gathered unto his people, for he shall not enter into the land which I have given unto the children of Israel, because ye rebelled against my word at the waters of Meribah. Take Aaron and Eleazar his son, and bring them up unto Mount Hor, and strip Aaron of his garments, and put them up on Eleazar his son, and Aaron shall be gathered unto his people and shall die there. So his was for his disobedience at Meribah. Then we have, still in 1407 B.C., we have the bronze snake. It's kind of funny. Keith brought that up right before service about the fact that they were bringing up that snake. If we don't raise up Christ like that snake in our services, the people can't be healed. And we were talking about something that I'll talk about. I don't want what I'm going to say recorded. So when we get done here in a few minutes, because I'm going to quit pretty soon, I'm going to tell y'all a little story, and then we'll call it a night. But we have the bronze snake, Balaam and the angel, Numbers 22 through 25. The second census, Numbers 26. The daughter of Zelophehad, Numbers 27. Joshua chosen to succeed Moses, special sacrifices and holy days, vows of women in Numbers 30, conquest of Midian, Numbers 31. We're still in 1407. Division of Transjordan, summary of Israel's journey, apportionment of Canaan, borders and cities of refuge, Zeopold's daughters marry, Numbers 36. We're still in 1407 B.C. And then Psalms 90, the Psalm of Moses, Moses' summary of Israel's history, Deuteronomy 1 through 4. And then we go to 1406 B.C. in recapitulation of the law, Deuteronomy 4, 44 through 31. 1406, we have still Deuteronomy 32, the Song of Moses. Moses blesses the 12 tribes, the blessings of Moses, then the death of Moses in Deuteronomy 34, and that's in 1406 B.C. still. And then God commissions Joshua. Rahab welcomes the spies. The Israelites cross Jordan. And we're into Joshua, so you know where we're at. And the conqueror of Jericho and Ai is 1406 B.C. Um, 1405 B.C., kings join Israel, and that's Joshua 9. And we're going to finish on this, and then I'm going to mute this mic and tell you my story. 1405 B.C., the sun stands still, and that's Joshua 10. And let's think about the sun standing still. From our scientific knowledge of today, that means the earth quit rotating. Well, that can't happen because it's the centrifugal force of the earth spinning that keeps us in place. Just once more, God proving his power. God showing, I can do what I want to do. And I think that's something that throughout everything we read in the Bible, throughout all that we do, that we... Lucian and I have had conversation about fossil fuel and oil. Folks, I know the scientists can tell you without a doubt that that's fossil fuel and that came from dead dinosaurs and on and on and on. My personal belief, God put that oil right where he wanted it. And there's exactly how much he wants down there. And if he wants to put more down there, he'll put more down there. He'll dry it up. And you know, the scientists say, oh, we've got 10,000 years of oil left, all this. Not if God draws it all out. Not if God goes, done. So, you know, I just think that we as Christians have to watch what we believe out of the secular world and what they tell us, because a lot of times they tell us based on things that really aren't there. So now I'm going to mute this and I'm going to tell you a quick story. So Sunday morning I went to a church with my brothers. It was Arminian. I knew it was going to be Arminian. I knew I probably wasn't going to enjoy it, but wanted to go with my family and on. Anyway, after the pastor's wife got done with her 30 or 40 minutes of music and having this person, she teaches in a music school, and some of her students came in and sang songs, and some of them weren't even Christian songs. And anyway, long story short, he finally gets up there, and I look at my watch, he's got about 15 minutes if he's going to get us out of there. Normal time, 15-20 minutes. But he had what he said biblically, he could have said in 5 minutes. He's the CEO of Loveworth Finding. Loveworth Finding is Adrian Rogers, and if y'all don't know who Adrian Rogers is, he led Belmont Baptist Church up there for 40 years, and that church, when he died, was running about 15,000 in church on Sunday morning. He and my dad had numerous contests in the paper about Arminianism and sovereign grace and things like that. But this guy spent 20 minutes telling us about how great Love Worth Finding, how great Adrian Rogers, and how great he was. And he gave us the first part of John 3:16 and told us how he had a buddy up in Paragould, Arkansas, and it took him 2 years to get that church to respond to an altar call. It took 2 years for them to respond to an invitation. And then he had his invitation and nobody responded. And it's not funny that nobody, but he didn't give them anything to respond to. He didn't give them anything scriptural. I mean, it was just top water.
He didn't live Christ up like
nope.
He was lifted up to serve.
Nope, he didn't. But I told Kathy when I got home, I said, well, from now on, when I go up there, when I leave on Sunday morning, when I'm coming back on Sunday morning, I'll leave early enough Sunday morning that I can get down to Grenada, Mississippi and go at Central in Grenada before I come on home, because it's hard for me to get up and make it all the way here before service. I'd have to be up. I mean, I'm normally awake at 4, but I'm not normally awake and in the car by 4. So, but I can get to Grenada in 2 hours. So, Brother Keith, will you close us in prayer?
History of